Angus Young, how you doing?
Good, Becca.
The Offspring.
How's it going, Becca?
Dave Grohl, how you going, mate?
Good, man.
Pete, it's been a long time coming.
Oh, Becca, hasn't it indeed?
We go inside the dressing room, speak to the biggest names in music.
Keith Richards, the Rolling Stones.
And crack open their esky.
This is exactly how I imagined you, by the way, sitting opposite me with a vodka and orange.
You're a discerning chap.
This is The Rider.
Hey, it's Becca. Welcome back to The Rider. After a quick six-month break, time to get back onto it and interview some of the great music stars who are getting around and releasing new music at the moment. Tell you what, some great gigs that have been happening lately. I saw Incubus with Live a few weeks ago, and in fact, that was just an incredible surprise. Incubus were on fire, playing a lot of covers, which really surprised me. And of course, Live, bringing it home, I think it's one of those bands where you don't always tell your mates that you're excited about seeing live, but they were fantastic. And also this weekend, this is a gig which I don't think anyone was expecting to happen. Pandemonium. Already Melbourne and Sydney done and dusted. Of course, the controversial Anzac Day performance got moved to Homebush, and this weekend it's Gold Coast and Brisbane with Psychedelic Furs and, of course, Alice Cooper and Blondie. And of course, don't forget Wolf Mother as well. We, a bit disappointed that Placebo didn't make it, but that's a pretty solid performance, though. A pretty great lineup. And I've got to say congratulations to Andrew McManus, who really had it against him. People were saying it wasn't going to happen, and sure enough, this weekend, the very first Pandemonium wraps up.
This is The Rider.
There's some great new music coming out at the moment, and this one just came out of nowhere. I had no idea they were working on new stuff over there in Perth. I'm talking about Jebediah. Now, don't forget, 1997, Slightly Odd Way was the album which came out, and it was so distinctive. We'd never seen anything like it before. I always compare them to a bit of Rat Cat when I heard this song, Leaving Home. There was Military Strongman. It's been 13 years since their latest album. They got in that studio in Perth and recorded Kosciuszko. You remember this track? That was She's Like a Comet, which came off the album Kosciuszko. And they've gone back into the same studio 13 years later with the same producer. And it's such an incredible album. It's called Oiks. We're going to find out from Kevin Mitchell what actually is Oiks, by the way, but also the first single was Motivation. Gum Up the Bearings sounds like straight up, standard, solid Jebediah. Rubber Man, also another great track you've got to check out. And Don't Stop. In fact, the entire album has been incredible. I've been listening to it non-stop for the last couple of weeks. We got him on the line from Perth, and he's in his home studio right now, Kevin Mitchell. There he is. G'day, mate.
Aloha.
Hey, how are you, mate?
I am good.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Mate, congrats on the album. Well, it's bloody awesome, by the way.
Thank you. Cheers. Yeah. Look, it's a relief and a... Well, not a surprise, but it's a relief that we got there in the end. It took a long time.
So how long has it been complete? Because I know you sort of said you were starting off as far back as 2018 in a way, the very early stages of, you know, jamming and just seeing what happens. But how long have you had it in the can for?
Only like, I guess probably by the end of 22. I think it was pretty much done. And then we spent 23 just figuring out or just getting all the logistics of who was going to put it out and all that kind of stuff, because we did it all independently and finished it all ourselves. And then we were able to start sort of putting songs out by sort of late last year. So, yeah, I think really, I guess it took 4 years between 2018 and 2022.
Must be a weird time where you've pressed send and you've decided on the track listing and all that kind of thing. And there must be a moment where you text everyone and go, are you guys sure? Any last minute changes or you're all good?
Yeah. I mean, I can see why you would think that, but there wasn't really. I mean, you know, I guess it's our sixth record and because we've been around for such a long time, I don't know, I guess I think you get to a, you do start to get to a point where, or for me anyway, I get to a point a little bit where it's just like, you know, it doesn't feel like, you know, this is a record that's just like, this is just a encapsulates us here and now. It's not like, it's, I don't think it's going to be the last record we ever make. I hope not. It's not going to be the last record I ever make. And it's certainly not the first. And so I think you tend to kind of relax a little bit more about these kind of things. Like, there's not so much pressure. Like, it's not, you know, those first couple of records, you know, it's like it's your whole life, you know. And after a while, I don't know, I've just started to come to kind of have a bit more perspective on things and just kind of, you know, I think I have a better kind of concept and understanding of what these records really are in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, it's a project that we've put a lot of time and love and effort and money and stuff into over the last few years, but it's, you know, it is what it is.
So, 13 years ago was the last album, Kosciuszko. And it doesn't feel like it's been that long though, because you have been touring, and sure I saw you, you know, spring loaded, I think, you know, middle of COVID in Sydney, and that was great to see you on stage then. But you've had the Bob Evans project as well, so it doesn't feel like at all like it's been that long.
No, it doesn't at all. I guess that, I mean, part of that is probably like an age thing as well as you get older. But 2011, I suppose, you know, I've put out a couple of Bob records since then. Jeb's, you know, we spent 2015 doing a lot of stuff like around a sort of 20th anniversary of our band, and did up a heap of touring, and then of course, you know, having gone through COVID, I think, you know, for a lot of people, we've felt that COVID has kind of created, it was such a weird sort of, it created this weird sort of time vacuum. And I sometimes find it very hard to place, like, you know, something that happened before COVID, sometimes it feels like, you know, 20 years ago.
Well, I
can't place what happened. Those 2 years are such a weird sort of blob of time. Sometimes I find it really hard to place, like, what happened when, you know?
I mean, 2018, you went to the studio with the band. Was there any plans for that, or was it just one of those things where let's just go in and just see what happens?
Yeah, it's exactly what we did. And it's something that we wouldn't have ever entertained doing previously. I think we finally, I think we just got to a point where we had the confidence to be able to take that kind of risk. Because what we're essentially doing is taking a total risk on our chemistry still being alive and kicking on a creative level. So in 2018, we decided to book a studio for like 5 days, and we went in with no songs. And the idea was that we would all set up in the live room of the studio, mic up everything, and just like jam for, you know, 4 or 5 hours, like we would normally do in a rehearsal room, but just hit record and just let the computer record everything. And then the next day we would come in at lunchtime, we'd spend a few hours listening back to everything that we'd done, and we'd just kind of sort out what bits were good and what, you know, throw out the bad stuff, put all the good stuff to one side, and then work on like those kind of ideas that we liked and see if we can turn them into songs, or maybe, you know, two completely separate ideas from the same night, we might go, well, can those two ideas work together in the same song? And so we kind of figured we'll just do that for a bunch of days and sort of cut and paste things together and see what results it yields. And sure enough, we've just had about 20 songs, you know, not finished, of course. Some of them are just ideas, but we had enough there for us to kind of go away from that first session going, okay, well, I feel like there's an album to be made here. And then as we kept coming back and regrouping and working on the stuff that we had before, of course, we were coming up with new stuff all the time. And so we, you know, those later sessions kind of yielded these songs that were very much kind of studio creations rather than us setting up and playing in the room together. So you've got songs like Gum Up the Bearings and Motivation and stuff, which are very much, and Bad For You, this first song on the record, which are all very much kind of the sound of us in a room together. But then you've got stuff like Rubber Man and Don't Stop, which is the complete opposite of that. It's just, we've never even played those songs together. live once before. You know, we just piece them together bit by bit in the studio without ever getting in a room together and playing it.
That explains why every single song feels like it's got a different identity almost, you know, like Gum Up the Bearings was like The Clash to me. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Were you inspired by anything for The Clash, or you've been listening to The Clash?
Yeah, a lot of people mention The Clash, but, you know, to me, it's, you know, for us, that song is more of a homage to Archers of Loaf than it is to The Clash. But, you know, I mean, I can totally hear the similarities, you know, but obviously people are, you know, a lot more aware of who The Clash are than Archers of Loaf, so maybe it's an easier comparison to make. But, that, you know, is obviously a good kind of example of a song that, you know, when the four of us are together and we feel like making a racket, that's the kind of song that kind of comes out pretty easily, you know.
Yeah, whereas Rubber Man, to me, felt like it could have been a Bob Evans song quite easily, or even Tame Impala.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's a little bit psychedelic in, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely could, it's kind of veering into Bob territory, but a bit more sort of weirder, I suppose, than any of the Bob stuff that I've done. But yeah, certainly that song kind of came from me. I started that song sort of on my own and kind of built it up, and the other guys came in later and added their stuff. So yeah, it's definitely got a different identity, I suppose, to a song like Gum Up the Bearings. But, you know, I think, you know, it's all still, you know, all the songs, regardless of how they started out, all the songs have kind of, are like, you know, sausages that have gone through the Jebediah kind of factory. You know, they all kind of come out sounding like Jebediah, I think, in the end.
Oh, mate, it's a super album. But I've got to ask, Oix, where do they come from? What is Oix?
Oix is, okay, so this is the story. So I was reading an interview one day of my good mate Tim Rogers from UMI, and we were playing on a festival together, or we were about to go on tour together, because the interviewer asked him what his first impressions of our band was, and he described us as being like a little gang of oiks. And I had no idea what oiks meant, so I looked it up and came to learn that it was I think it's a Victorian era kind of English word to describe, like, an oik is like an uncouth youth, or like, you know, I guess it would be like a little street urchin. It kind of rings to mind like Oliver Twist, kind of, you know, little troublemakers on the street corners. And so I just, you know, I liked the sound of the word. I liked what it meant. It kind of fits with the kind of theme of Jebediah record titles, sort of being sort of wonky words, wonky sounding words. And I also kind of, you know, it came to kind of take on even more meaning for me over time, because, you know, as I've been, you know, promoting the record over the last week and doing lots of these interviews and talking a lot about it, I've come to realize that, you know, a lot of what this record represents, you know, I was talking about how we came in with no songs and we were really relying on this chemistry being there to make this record. And what we found is that even after nearly 30 years of being together, and even having not written songs together for quite a few years, we went into a room, we closed the door, the rest of the world doesn't exist, there's just the four of us. And, you know, we go back to being the teenagers that we were when the band first started. And I think a lot of people could probably relate to that, you know, because it's probably similar to when you catch up with a group of your school friends, you know, perhaps that you haven't seen in 20 or 30 years. And it doesn't take long before you start kind of telling the old kind of in jokes, and you sort of start reverting back to your old, you know, identities and stuff from way back. It's kind of like that when you're being in a band. So, you know, we sort of go back to being that little gang of oiks that Tim described, even though we're all sort of pushing 50 now, in that environment. So yeah, you know, I guess that oiks has kind of come to represent a few different, you know, it's come to represent a bunch of different stuff for me now.
He's got a great way with words, Tim Rogers. He's the modern day poet. And it must pinch yourself sometimes, because you go on tour with these guys and you see them at venues and stuff. And I mean, I totally look up to UMI, and there must be so many bands you've also pinched yourself and gone, oh my God, I can't believe we're in the same room.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, to plug the tour that we're going to, I mean, we're going on tour with Magic Dirt this year. through July, August, September. And now Magic Data, another band like UMI, who, you know, I can remember the first day that I heard their music, you know, going around to Vanessa's house. This is before Jebediah were even a band. Going around to Nessa's place and she had Magic Dirt playing on the CD player. I was like, what's this? And, you know, that's how I discovered them and fell in love with them. And then, you know, within the first year of the band forming, we got to support them. It was the first time I'd ever seen Jebediah on like a shiny post strip, like a poster on the street and everything. Yeah. And we were kind of intimidated by them as well. You know, we looked up to them so much and, you know, and now we've become friends and we're doing this tour together after all these years. So, yeah, there's loads of those kind of moments. And, you know, I think what that really sort of brings to light for me is, you know, now that as I'm getting older and still doing it after all these years, is you realize like what a gift all that stuff is. And if you hang around long enough and you're able to kind of ride out, you know, the whatever kind of obstacles and low patches that this kind of life brings you, And if you're able to stay together as a band, and then, you know, there's a great payoff at the end of that. It's like these long friendships, you know, and these great opportunities to do things that, you know, if you quit, we would have missed out on. So yeah, that's what I'm really feeling now with that. But yeah, there's a bunch, like Tumbleweed were another one, Rat Cat, you know, they're all bands that I idolized when I was a kid, and they're all people that I now count as friends, you know.
What an era it was.
Pretty amazing.
It is amazing. And I think looking back at the Jebs, you know, and I remember hearing, you know, leaving home, I think when I was 17, it was my graduation year from high school, and that puts me in that bracket. And that was such a great era for Perth bands after that. It's almost like you're right at the beginning of this incredible golden era of bands to come out of Perth. I just think of, you know, you got Little Birdie and you got the Sleepy Jackson and obviously the Eskies. It was a great music scene over there. Was part of that because you were stuck there almost, you know, like it was always the progression to make it big and then move to Melbourne.
Yeah, well, you know, this is something that obviously for a long time was these kind of questions were being asked, and so, you know, I've been sort of forced to kind of reflect on it. And I think the general consensus seems to be that when we came along, Perth WA bands had sort of always moved to Melbourne or Sydney, or they'd just gone straight to London or whatever. You know, a lot of well-known WA bands like the Triffids and Stems and that kind of stuff, you know, were very popular in the 80s and stuff, but they everyone left Perth. And I think like, when we came along, we decided we were going to stay. You know, we decided that we weren't going to relocate to Sydney or Melbourne or go overseas. We were going to stay where we were in Perth, and we were going to try to get as successful as we could get without ever moving. And I think maybe the fact that we were able to do that, hopefully kind of gave other bands, you know, made other bands realize that they could do it too if that's what they chose to do. Now, you know, there's no right or wrong way to do things, but I think it's been really great for West Australian music that there's been all these bands that have become really successful all around Australia. We've got like big national bands like the ones that you mentioned, and of course it reached its zenith with Tame Impala, because they're not just one of the biggest bands in Australia, one of the biggest bands in the whole world, and they stayed in Perth. Well, pretty much stadium. I mean, they're never there, really, are they? They're always touring around the world.
Always touring, yeah.
But, you know, so I think that's been really good for WA music, because there hasn't been that drain of artists leaving, you know. And we were lucky, you know, because we signed to a label, and so we had some financial support, you know, to help us with all the flights and all that kind of stuff. And of course, these days, you know, with the internet and everything, that opens up all these other opportunities to sort of have your music heard outside of your own city as well. But yeah, I think if bands, you know, if artists generally stay in their home city or they stay in their home country, you know, because you can broaden this to an international level and talk about Australian artists as well. If you're able to stay in your own country, and lots of artists are also able to do that, then I think it helps give that place a really strong identity, you know. And I think that now, like you've mentioned, people people, if you say to someone, you know, who are some WA bands, people could reel off a handful of them pretty quickly without thinking too hard, you know, and that may not have been the case, you know, prior.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And like I moved to Perth 2001 and I was able to sort of, you know, go out and be a part of that. And obviously, you know, Freo's music scene was incredibly vibrant. And I don't see the Jebs as being an iconic Freo band, though. I see the Eskies as, but...
Yeah, we never really... I mean, we grew up south of the river, so we were, you know, Freo, for those of people who don't know Perth, you know, Freo's sort of south of the river and the city, Perth is, or the city, as everyone calls it, is north of the river. So so Fremantle was kind of our stomping ground. But I suppose when we were sort of getting a national audience, we always talked about Perth, being from Perth, because I think to be any more specific than that was almost like going too far.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Like it was enough of a novelty that we were even from the state of Western Australia at that point in time. So I think perhaps, you know, for bands like Eskimo Joe, like you mentioned, and bands after that, you know, to identify as like, no, we're not just from WA, we're not just from Perth, we're from Freo. You know, I think just, if anything, that speaks to just, you know, how much awareness there was, I suppose, and how many bands from that area were sort of getting a national audience that you could even get that specific and it would be relevant. You know, for us when we started out, I don't think it would have been relevant for us to get that specific about where we're from. It was just like, yeah, we're from WA.
Has it been good that you haven't been living, you know, in each other's pockets as a band? Like you said, you know, you got back in the studio and after a while you start to gel and you start to go back to your old personalities. That's obviously key to the fact you're still around.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've stayed friends and we've been friends since we were in high school. So, you know, that friendship has survived. But yeah, we're not in each other's pockets like we used to be. When we first started touring, you know, and this is no exaggeration, we would, you know, we'd fly to Brisbane or Adelaide or wherever and to start a tour, and we'd get in a van and we'd basically just tour in a van for like a month and go across all of the eastern states and Tasmania or whatever, do like a full tour. And then, you know, after 5 weeks, we'd come back to Perth. And I guarantee you that the first weekend back, we'd be calling each other going, hey, what you doing? Hey, where are you going? What bands are you, or what pub are you going to? What band are you going to? We'd all be hanging out together again within like a matter of days, because we all had the same group of friends. We all came from the same social kind of circles. And so we really did we were like family, like brothers and sisters. And it was like that for many years. It was only sort of in the, you know, by the time we sort of got to the early 2000s that started to change. We all started to grow up and kind of, get in relationships and all that kind of stuff. And now, of course, you know, some of us, well, I'm married and I've got kids and, you know, some of us live in Victoria and some are still in Perth or in WA, in Freo. I should say. Because Vanessa, you know, getting back to the Freo, I mean, Vanessa in our band, I mean, she has always been staunchly, I mean, she is the archetypal Fremantle person. I mean, she, more than anybody I know, she's been living in Fremantle since she moved out of home when she was 18 or whatever. You know, my best memories of just leading up to the band starting was me and Chris, you know, we'd go around to her apartment in Fremantle and she would introduce us to so much music. Some of my favorite bands, you know, were from being in her apartment, listening to CDs and having a good time with things. Yeah, anyway, that's a free aside. But yes, getting back to the in each other's pockets thing. Yeah, perhaps the fact that we're not sort of in each other's pockets so much anymore. And we're still able to kind of reconnect as friends in the studio and make new music. I think it just says a lot about the history and the bonds and the connection more than anything, you know. And like I said, it's like family, you know, or the band is kind of like the family that you choose, kind of. It's one of those scenarios. And there's so much history there that I think that it'll always, you know, be that way until one person decides that they don't want to do it anymore, and that'll be the day the band ends.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, do you feel like you're a better musician now than the very beginning? You know, like, of course you are. You're a better, you know, you're a better guitarist, well, better singer.
There was only one way to go.
Yeah, I know, I know. I just realized what I was asking. I mean, but I guess the thing is, because you are a better musician than you were, say, when Slightly Odd Way came out or whatever, do you ever think, oh, I'd love to do that one slightly differently?
I mean, I don't anymore. I mean, for years after making Slightly Odd Way, I could never really listen to it. You know, because it was such an awkward exercise of just critically analyzed. I couldn't listen to it without being overly critical about everything. You know, not just from the sound of my voice to the production, the guitars, even the songwriting, you know, everything to me just sounded like, you know, wasn't good enough or whatever. But, you know, it probably took into my 30s before I realized that, you know, a lot of the things that I was critical about were the things that people loved. Like, you know, and it was the stuff that made us sound like us and different to everybody else. So that was the stuff that in my younger days, I felt insecure about, because I'd hear Jebediah would come on the radio after, you know, Soundgarden or I don't know, just like some kind of band from that era that was, and I'd just think, oh God, like, you know, we're so scrappy and not polished or slick at all, and you know, it sounds so amateur and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, with enough time and distance and not listening to it for ages, and then in my 30s I came back to listening to it again when we did our 20th anniversary tour, and we played Slightly Away in full for the first time ever, and so we all had to listen to the record to learn some of these songs again, and that was when it kind of hit me. Enough years had gone by, and I was like, I think now, after all this time, I think I get what the appeal was. And yeah, like I said, a lot of it was stuff that were the very same things that I felt kind of insecure about in the early days. I'm a different person than I was back then, but I'm certainly a very different musician. I think the one thing that hasn't changed is just that love and just that sort of enthusiasm. Like, you know, I'm still really enthusiastic about making music. I still get giddy and excited about it. And I think it's that enthusiasm that probably is the main driver. You know, I never will be a virtuoso on guitar, or I'll never be able to sing like Tom York or Chris Cornell or whatever. You know, people don't come to see Jebediah because they want to lesson in that kind of stuff, you know. So, you know, enthusiasm, it can really get you a long way.
It was such a distinctive sound, and it did stand out when Triple J played it for the first time. And you're right, it was next to Spoon Man by Soundgarden or something. And your Bob Evans stuff as well, so, so different. And you did that tour last year with mixed in with Kevin versus Bob. And which I think is the first time you've done that, isn't it? Where you've done some Jebediah songs with
Absolutely.
Bob Evans. And you're going to keep doing Bob Evans? I mean, I think there was a bit of a rumor getting around that was maybe going to be the last tour, but I don't think so, right?
No. I'll always, you know, I mean, whether I continue under the Bob Evans name or not is sort of a run. Every time I make a record, I think to myself, am I still going to keep doing this stuff as Bob Evans, or do I just start using my own name? But no, I mean, Bob Evans is basically it's really my main creative avenue, really. When you consider it's taken over 10 years for Jebediah to make a record, it's what most of my kind of creative time goes into. So yeah, Bob Evans will always be a vehicle for my solo stuff. And also, you know, it's that freedom I get being able to pretty much do whatever I want, with the Bob Evans thing, you know? So it's always going to be pretty different to Jebediah. But yeah, that tour that I did last year, it was called When Kev Met Bob, and I basically played sort of 50% Bob songs and 50% Jeb songs. It's something I'd been thinking of wanting to do for a long, long, long time, but I was always sort of holding it back, waiting for it to feel right. And it's got to the point now where it kind of feels like I, that distinction that I created by calling myself Bob Evans and keeping Jebediah and Bob Evans really separate, it worked really, really well. But it's kind of played out now. Like it's done its job. Like it doesn't, but you know, the Bob Evans thing and the Jebediah thing are both very well established in their own, you know, they've got their own kind of lanes, you know, and I don't feel like I need to keep trying hard to keep that separation now, or, you know, it's not like a secret anymore, you know, so that tour was actually, you know, a huge amount of fun, because not only was it sort of coming out of COVID and not being able to tour for a few years and being able to kind of get back to some sense of normality, but also, you know, starting a set with a song that I wrote as a teenager, a Jebediah song, and being able to play everything from my entire back catalogue, my entire history of both things combined, it felt amazing. You know, it was a very different feeling coming off stage. Kind of felt, you know, felt, you know, shouldn't really come as a surprise, but I felt a very real sense of wholeness.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not joking. I'm actually joking.
No,
drinking,
no.
I just had
no, it
had dinner.
Keep doing that.
Had dinner.
Cry.
I'm not crying. but yeah, so it felt great, and to do it, because, you know, whether it's Bob Evans or Jebediah songs, you know, that's my history. That's me, you know, in song since I was a kid. So yeah, it's something that I want to keep doing more of.
Well, look, it's great to have you back for your sixth album, and it doesn't feel that long, like I said, you know, 13 years, but it's out now. It is a beautiful creation. All songs very, very different, but incredibly polished as well. And I know you recorded it all in the same studio as Kosciuszko back all that time ago. So I guess it's like going in there and it's got the same sound and the same smell and same producer as well.
Well, no, you're right. Yeah. I mean, Dave Parkin is the guy who runs Blackbird Studio. It's his studio in Perth. And yeah, it's where we did Kosciuszko. And even though a lot of years have gone by since we did Kosciuszko, in so many ways, like going back into that studio and working with Dave, it kind of felt like we just picked up where we had left off. And Kosciuszko, you know, at the time, that was, you know, we experimented a lot on that record. And you know, that was a pretty big leap forward for us at the time, I felt. And so I felt like this record is, it feels like a pretty natural kind of next kind of step after Kosciuszko. It does share a lot of kind of sonic qualities. The two records do occupy a bit of a similar space, I reckon, but just because it's got that same producer and same sound. And but I feel like Oyx is just kind of pushing things just a little bit further out into the water, you know, than Kosciuszko. Kosciuszko is a pretty tight song and pretty poppy too. This song's probably goes off in a way more different directions.
Yeah, but I absolutely love it. And look, congratulations. And we're going to see you on the road in July as well with Magic Dirt. Awesome. And are you going to get back in the studio for some rehearsals and all that kind of thing? I'm sure you will blow out the cobwebs.
Well, that's right. We've got to learn of some of these songs, some of these new songs. So we've only played a couple of them live so far. So yeah, we'll have to rehearse up a bunch of them. And it's going to be great. Can't wait to do this tour with Magic Dirt. It's going to be so much fun.
All the details online on the Jeb socials. Kevin Mitchell, great to speak to you. Have a great night. Thanks for your time, mate. And we'll see you on the road soon.
Thanks, buddy.
There he is, Kevin Mitchell from Jebediah. Check out the new album, Oyx. Listen to it over and over and over again. It's fantastic. And, of course, their tour kicks off in July on the road with Magic Dirt. All those dates on their socials. Give the writer a follow, whether you're on Spotify or iHeart, Apple. And back again very soon with Cav from Eskimo Joe. They've got new music out. We'll talk to him soon. This is The Writer with Becco. Catch you then.